All right, so should we do this?
Yes. Yes, we shall. Woo-hoo! Oh, hello, everyone.
We are recording this later every week, or every fortnight.
We're sorry. It's been one of those weeks.
Life.
In general.
Same thing keeps getting in the way of recording podcasts.
Ah, oh, no.
Curse you! I'm tired.
Oh, you're tired in a funny mood. Oh, this is going to be good, everyone. Yay!
And I'm going to have to edit this straight after we record.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm going to be off and watching Timeless. Yeah.
Obsession.
Yes, I am obsessed. And you have a problem with me being obsessed about the show, about history?
No, no, not really.
Cool. All
right. I've got plenty of obsessions.
Wouldn't
myself.
Care anyway. Wouldn't
there we care. Go. So because I have to edit this straight away once we're done, I think we should get started.
Yes, we shall. Hello.
Yes, let's. What the? History. 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 Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history that will make you say what the history.
Nommies.
I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Susie Holland.
Quite nommies herself.
Aww. Oh, thank you, sir.
And indeed.
Oh, I'm not going there.
Okay. And what wondrous, bizarre, historical tidbit do you have for us?
Yeah, okay. A tidbit indeed. Okay, now, the tropical island of Barbados, situated in the Caribbean Sea in the Lesser Antilles of the West Indies, I know I'm being very specific, usually conjures up sun-kissed beaches and palm trees. Oh, a gorgeous paradise where one can just chill and not move for a while. However, for a particular part of Barbados, things do move when they're not meant to. I'm talking about a section of the Christchurch Parish Cemetery where items haven't been listening to the term final resting place. Known as the Chase Vault, the inhabitants haven't been sleeping like the dead, so to speak. The wealthy Chase family were known throughout Barbados for their vile and brutal treatment of their slaves and were also known to be quite eccentric, led by patriarch Thomas Chase. The vault originally was constructed for Mr. James Elliot in 1724, and in 1808 the Chase family purchased the vault, which had a heavy marble door and took 8 men to move it. The vault was built half sunken into the ground and is constructed of concrete and compacted coral, which makes up most of Barbados's foundation. By the time the vault was in the care of the Chase family, it had one inhabitant, the wooden coffin of a Miss Thomasina Goddard. Another source writes that the vault's first occupant was Elizabeth Elliot, the wife of James, in 1792, and when the vault was opened for Thomasina, the coffin of Elizabeth had gone. Thomasina's coffin was allowed to stay in the vault after the Chasers purchased it. Nobody knows where the coffin of Elizabeth went, apparently. It didn't take long for the vault to have another occupant, when in 1808 Mary Ann Chase, the infant daughter of the family, was interred in a heavy, lead-lined coffin, which took 3 men to carry. A senior member of the family was interred not long before Mary Ann, with 3 men being used to carry this lead-lined coffin as well. Now, I'm mentioning lead-lined because it's really important, so just stay with me here, okay? In 1812, the lead-lined coffin of 20-year-old Dorcas Chase was interred with rumours that she had been starved to death by Thomas, who was known to have mistreated her. Other sources say that she committed suicide to escape her father's abuse. 2 months later, the vault was opened to receive another lead-lined coffin, that of Thomas Chase himself, who committed suicide after Dorcas's death. Thomas's casket apparently weighed 240 pounds and took 8 men to carry. Mm. Yeah. It was during this last interment that the men noticed something very wrong in the vault. The heavy lead-lined coffin of Dorcas had been pushed to a wall standing upright, but upside down, with Mary Ann's coffin also pushed up against a wall. The men put it down to vandals, but the locks on the coffins were untouched. The coffins were put back in their original places and the vault resealed. In 1816, the vault was reopened to receive the coffin of 11-year-old Charles Brewster Ames, and when the men walked in, again the coffins were in disarray, tossed about the vault with no evidence of tampering. Only the wooden coffin of Thomasina Goddard was left untouched. The men rearranged the coffins into their rightful places and left the vault. Soon afterwards, there were stories of shrieking and screaming coming from the vault, with a woman on horseback telling authorities that near the vault, her horse reared, foaming at the mouth. Other stories told of horses being driven insane around the same time and running into the ocean, drowning beneath the waves. Black magic, voodoo, and family curse stories also had Barbados in thrall. The vault was opened again later in 1816 for Samuel Brewster and again in 1819 for Thomasina Clark, and once more the men found the coffins in gross disarray, again only with the undamaged wooden coffin of Thomasina Goddard staying where it was interred. By this time, the phenomenon had caught the attention of the governor of Barbados, Lord Combermere, who was present at the funeral for Thomasina Clark, with the governor's wife writing, and I quote, "In my husband's presence, every part of the floor was sounded to ascertain that no subterranean passage or entrance was concealed. It was found to be perfectly firm and solid. No crack was even apparent. The walls, when examined, proved to be perfectly secure. No fracture was visible, and the sides, together with the roof and flooring, presented a structure so solid as if formed of entire slabs of stone." End quote. After this examination of the vault, all the coffins were put back where they were meant to be, with the floor being dusted with fine sand to mark footprints, and the marble entry door being sealed with mortar, and Lord Combermere himself marking the wet mortar with his signet ring impression. Several other male members of the society did likewise. 8 months later, Lord Combermere's curiosity got the better of him, and he checked the vault. The entry door and markings were found untouched, but just wanting to make sure, or being extremely curious, he ordered the door to be opened. The men employed for this task found they couldn't open the door, and after 12 men together pushed open the door, they found Thomas Chase's lead coffin had been blocking their entry. They found all the lead-lined coffins in more violent disarray, with Mary Ann's coffin being smashed up against the wall with such force that the corner had a chunk broken off. The other coffins were upended and tossed on one another. Even more strangely, the white sand that was dusted on the floor was intact. Nathan Lucas, a member of the Barbados House of Assembly, had this to say about the scene, and I quote, "I examined the walls, the arch, and every part of the vault, and found every part old and similar, and a mason in my presence struck every part of the bottom with his hammer, and all was solid. I confess myself at a loss to account for all the movements of these leaden coffins. Thieves certainly had no hand in it, and as for any practical wit or hoax, too many were requisite to be trusted with the secret for it to remain unknown. And as for Negroes having anything to do with it, their superstitious fear of the dead and everything belonging to them precludes any idea of the kind. All I know is that it happened, and I was an eyewitness of the fact." End quote. Lord Combermere decided enough was enough and had the coffins buried in separate locations throughout the cemetery. The Chase vault is empty and remains so to this day, which is probably a good thing. But you can visit it.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange, and there are lots of theories about how this could have happened, but all my references are included with this podcast, so go and check it out yourselves, guys. Fully want you to do that.
Mm-hmm. Part of what we do this is to encourage curiosity about history.
That's right. Go and check it out.
Yeah.
There's a whole world of history.
Absolutely.
Go get it, peoples.
And history's from the 1800s and history from the 20th century even.
Oh, my goodness. We do jump around on this.
We do indeed. And that's the best segue I can do because I cannot think of any way to connect these stories.
No, I can't either. Yeah. I was thinking about that before. I'm going, my story plus your story. They're like chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
They're like... Yes. Salted caramel and salt.
I guess.
Oh, God.
They're two different stories.
Yes. So, without further ado, Absolutely. Here is Trev.
I mentioned this piece of What the History in passing a couple of episodes back, but it was so strange, I found I couldn't just let it go. So it's time to look at another rather odd banning. But first, let us set the scene. From December 1997 to March 1998, actor Claire Danes was pretty busy filming for the role of Alice Morano in the movie Broke Down Palace. This took her to a few exotic locations, including Bangkok in Thailand, and, most importantly for this tale, Manila in the Philippines. All seemed fine when the production wrapped up, and then Vogue magazine released its April 1998 edition, which included an interview with Claire about her experiences during the filming of the movie. I should say right now, there are a lot of quotes in this upcoming story. It seemed Miss Danes was not particularly taken with Manila in the article and described it as, and I quote, a ghastly and weird city.
Ooh, that's harsh.
End quote. A little later, another interview with her was published in Empire magazine where she had more to say, stating that the city, quote, smelled of cockroaches with rats all over. And there is no sewerage system, and the people do not have anything. No arms, no legs, no eyes. End quote.
God.
I don't even understand that, but not there you me go. Neither. It's probably worth mentioning at this point that the main filming location in Manila was a rundown and dilapidated hotel in a less than pristine part of the city. Once word of these comments reached the people of the Philippines, well, let's just say the reaction was not very positive. A Manila City Council member, Kim Atienza, was initially not too concerned about Claire's comments in Vogue, writing them off as, quote, mere irresponsible statements of youth, end quote. When it came to the Empire article, though, Kim was much more critical, referring to the comments as going overboard and stating, quote, she painted a surreal picture of Manila. Those are irresponsible, bigoted, and sweeping statements that we cannot accept. We cannot stop her coming back because that is a diplomatic decision, but we can stop theatres in Manila from showing her films.
Ooh.
End quote. The local producer who shot the scenes in Manila, Jun Jaban, was even harsher, saying, and I quote, I cannot apologise for Miss Dane's acerbic tongue. I can only hope she chokes on it.
Ooh.
End quote. Mm. Even the president of the Philippines got involved, declaring Claire a persona non grata in the country and supporting calls to ban her. Kim Atienza called a motion for the Manila City Council to ban all of Claire's films until she apologised. The motion was passed 23-3. And I'm sure those other three were not very popular.
No, they will not be.
It didn't take long for news of the furor to reach Claire Danes, and about a week after the banning, she released the following statement. Quote, because of the subject matter of our film, Broke Down Palace, the cast was exposed to the darker and more impoverished places of Manila. My comments in Premier magazine only reflect those locations, not my attitude towards the Filipino people. They were nothing but warm, friendly, and supportive. End quote. So what did the driver of the ban, Kim Atienza, think of Claire's apology? Turns out, not much. As he declared it, quote, an excuse made by Hollywood press officers and not a genuine apology. End quote. He followed this up by saying, quote,
more quotes.
We are not hard to appease, but we know if an apology is true or not. We will lift the ban only if we are satisfied.
Ooh.
End quote. To make this even stranger, I can find no information on when the ban was lifted, so potentially it could still be in place now, 20 years later. So I call on you, our fellow What the Historians, listening to this podcast. If you have any information you can share on the banning of the dastardly Danes, please let us know. It would be nice to have a conclusion to this bit of What the History.
No Romeo and Juliet for you.
No, no.
No.
I wonder if that extends to TV, because then they wouldn't have Homeland either. It'd be a bit hard to just ban TV show in one city of the country.
Oh, I reckon they could do it.
Possibly. But yeah, I just think, are her films still banned in Manila? I wish I could actually find that out, because nothing I looked up would let me know. Even Wikipedia, which we don't usually use or thing or source, has a question mark as to the ending of the banning. So
the wiki lets you down, that's it.
Yes, indeed.
Red Rover, all over.
Don't worry, I haven't used Wikipedia as my source.
No.
I generally don't. Yeah.
I do like Wikipedia, though.
Yeah. It gives you a nice ballpark.
Yeah, it's good.
Yes. And on that note,
yes.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of What the History. As we've both mentioned, our references and links to more material about what we've discussed is in that podcast description just down below.
Mm-hmm.
If you are watching the YouTube version of this, there's going to be a link to the main podcast page where you'll find all the info.
There's heaps of pictures of the Chase Vault and even some publications I managed to find in Barbados that was telling the story of it. And it's quite interesting.
I bet.
They're quite interesting, yeah. And there's cool. There's YouTube articles as well about them too.
Well, we'll let people discover all the fun stuff.
Off you go, guys. Have fun. Enjoy.
And please let us know what you discover. We're really keen to hear from you about that or anything else you feel you want to say after the podcast. So you can get in touch with us super duper easily. You can head to our homepage at wthpod.rufusproject.com and leave a comment below this very episode. You can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com. There's a What the History podcast page on Facebook, or you can find us at pod_what on Twitter, or use the hashtag WTHpod. We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We love you guys.
Indeed, we do. So I think because I now need to work on this podcast, we should wrap things up.
Oh, Trev, you're going to be so busy tonight.
Yeah.
No more coffee, though, hey?
I'm glad I had coffee. So until next time, when we come back with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Good night, everyone.
Farewell.